As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Well, it's the end of April, so you can figure, close to the end of April, you can figure it's going to be warm and humid, and it will be 71 degrees right now, going up to 80 today with a chance for showers in the afternoon, about 40%, Peyton says. Peyton Malone, WWL Louisiana forecaster. You got the draft today. Of course, we've got all the coverage for you here on WWL. You have the Zurich Classic teeing off, and you have Jazz Fest starting. Tomorrow, highs of 84. 86 and 85 on Saturday and Sunday. Peyton said he didn't want to put it near 90, but it's going to feel like that. So be aware of that. Maybe bring your old shoes to Jazz Fest because it might get a little muddy, etc. And we thought we'd start with Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Good morning, Jesse. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Great to be back with you.
Thanks for taking the time. We do appreciate it. You know, one thing that I was wondering about with tariffs on, tariffs off, it's hard enough from a legitimate news source, I guess, to figure out what's going on and what the situation is. Where do people stand now in terms of being informed? Where do they primarily go to get their news? Because it's hard enough if you go to a legitimate news source to understand what's happening with the tariffs. It's almost impossible if you go to a source that's kind of like bending the truth, right?
Well, that's right, Tommy. And to take a bird's eye view of the research, we see that by and large, Americans still get their news from traditional broadcast sources, television, radio, print, as many of perhaps your listeners might know and experience, has been on the decline for a number of years in terms of people turning to the newspaper to get their news. Of course, online sources, social media have been on the rise, and even over the past couple of years have overtaken television as a top source of news for Americans. And when we say online, there's a lot embedded in that. And surveys sometimes can be a little bit of a difficult tool to really parse it out. It could be a legitimate news website with paid professional journalists, but it could also be an individual influencer. It could be a specific person who's not tied to a news organization on social media. It could be, in short, an informal and not even professional source of news online.
That means it could be anybody making up anything, and then just because it's online, and I've seen this happen, Professor, where it's like, I'm trying to think of maybe source bastardization, if that's a word, where one person makes something up, and then they attribute it to another source, and somebody else publishes it. And then if you look it up, you'll find five different sources, but it's actually dated back to, or goes back to one source, right? That could be, or could not be true or even credible or anything.
Right. It could be true. And with the rise of the internet and the social web, it just becomes a lot harder for your average news consumer to really be able to know what to trust and to really understand the original source of what it is that they're getting.
I know I do this for a living, and it's hard enough to me. It's hard enough for me to follow what's going on and what's real and what's real, what's not, what's opinion, what's not, what's shaded, what's not. Is there a measure of actual truth these days, or does it matter anymore? Because I always joke around and say, heck, it's America, make up whatever you want. But I don't know if that's that far from the truth, is it?
Well, there are, of course, still professional standards in legacy newsrooms, and we know that journalists make mistakes, just like the rest of us. But with the cost cutting happening at traditional news outlets, it becomes a little bit more difficult for newsroom staff to do all the due diligence. And furthermore, some of the buyouts that have happened in the news industry have affected senior veteran journalists. And so young folks coming up in these newsrooms don't always have the mentorship of an older generation of grizzled journalists, if you will, to help them understand what it really takes to verify facts.
Someone told me, a news person I respect a lot, about 15 or 20 years ago, that there's so much talk of bias and agendas in the newsroom. What people don't realize is, and you just alluded to this, Professor, with the cutbacks, there are people, one person doing a job of 10, and now they don't mind doing a job of 10 because they're happy that they still have a job. However, as a result, the product suffers in the process, and for people that think there's a lot of bias here or there, a lot of times it's just people that don't have the resources to do their job and they're doing the best they can. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, like I said, journalists can make mistakes. Journalists have their biases, and basically what sometimes will happen is confirmation bias. You think you know the answer to a question, or your prior assumptions will kind of point you in a certain direction, and facts can be very inconvenient things. Really the important work of this is to follow the facts where they lead. Newsroom staff, younger newsroom staff, are all guilty of making that mistake from time to time.
Time enters into this as well, because, and you and I have had this conversation before, I say sometimes maybe the news should be 10 minutes, maybe sometimes the news should be 3 hours. It depends on what's going on. And I think that is places some artificial constraints on it as well, where sometimes because they have to fill a half an hour, say, on TV news, stuff becomes news that really isn't. And then on other days, things that really need to be gone into in depth, they kind of skim over. Yes, no?
Well, that's right. And, Tommy, we've been seeing a lot of data telling us that something called news avoidance is on the rise. And one of the, that is people just tuning out. And one reason for that and one potential solution to that is to repackage news in a way that actually works for people. In a way, you know, and that gets to this question of time constraints and the sort of artificiality. Some of these conventions, like the length of a news program or a segment, are based in sort of industrial news production structures that have been here with us for a long time but aren't necessarily as relevant anymore. So I agree with you. I think news organizations, especially ones that are multimedia, should work to rethink some of those ways of doing things that have been around forever just because of some reason related to yesteryear's technology. Serve the people where they're at and in ways that they need. And maybe you'll get some of those viewers back.
Tell me more about news avoidance.
Yeah, so news avoidance is a term really coined by some of my other academic colleagues, especially at the Reuters Institute for Journalism at Oxford University. But many of us have been tracking, using surveys and other tools, the extent to which people of multiple generations are tuning into the news over time, and we have been seeing a steady trend downward, especially over really the past 5 years. And this is the case across multiple generations. It's the case in multiple countries, but especially among younger people and folks who don't have a college degree. We see them, just a greater proportion of these populations just tuning out. And there are some different words you could use to describe this idea of news avoidance, burnout, news exhaustion. But for a variety of reasons, more and more people are just tuning out. And it's something as researchers and people who care about an informed society, we're paying close attention to.
And I wonder if they're pulling out, if there's any way to determine this, because there's so much fatigue, or if you look at tariffs, it changes so often, and who knows how it's like. Just, it's like watching a football game in the first quarter, or a basketball game, whatever. It's like, just tell me what the end of the score is if I have an interest in it, or if I don't, if I'm not a fan of the actual process. Or is it because of confirmation bias? And you can answer when we come back. They already know what they want to believe, and if it doesn't match what they want to believe, they're not interested in it. We'll pick it up when we come back, talking to Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, our friend. He's also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Tell me about your habits on the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Text, message, data rates apply. Please don't text and drive. But how do you get your news? And are you open to different views on things, or different stories on things? Or do you seek out the one that you believe, and other, the hell with everything else? 621 traffic now, WWL. 626 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about where do you get your news from and how do you know what to believe, with Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Somebody texted in and said, I watch NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt on demand to get the main headlines. Then for stories that interest me, I do deeper dives at sources like New York Times, The Atlantic, Reuters, Associated Press, and then I read a conservative site or two to get the right-wing opinion on it. Somebody else said, I usually watch Fox News for national news. I will look at MSNBC and CNN at times to see the liberal take. If I hear anything questionable on either side, I will research it. And I guess the question is, Professor, should there be a conservative or liberal take, and is there a way to report the facts? Which brings us to the mind-numbing suggestion of what is absolute truth, right?
That's right. It's a little early in the morning for a question like that.
Mm-hmm. Because it is hard, because, you know, politicians know this, and they speak in double speak sometimes, where what they say is partially true but not all the way true. So who knows what's true, what's not? On the other side of it, for people that don't really follow the news, I would think politicians are aware of that, and they know how to manipulate those people, either with a soundbite here or a soundbite there, for people that are avoiding the news.
This is true. But Tommy, this isn't a new problem or a new challenge. For much of the 19th and even 18th century, at least here in the United States, our news environment was full of opinionated material, openly partisan material as well, pamphlets and newsletters and eventually newspapers that very openly would take a side on a particular issue, would openly mock the other side. It really wasn't until the late 19th century, early 20th century, when journalists and news organizations started to adopt something akin to the scientific method for their news reporting. And what I mean by that is they really started to try to be even more rigorous with gathering facts, and were more transparent about showing their work, recognized to some extent with humility that facts can be slippery things, that it can be really hard to get at the truth, but they applied something of a method of rigor to news reporting that hadn't really been seen before. And we started to enjoy that over the course of the 20th century. In my view, we've sort of maybe slipped away from that. It was never perfect. But starting in the 1980s and 90s with talk radio, the rise of cable news, partisan news, A lot of this, Tommy, is driven by the sheer economics of news in America. We have a commercial private sector media system. It's not the kind of public system like you see in some parts of Europe. And as such, not to be crass about it, but some of these media companies were basically chasing eyeballs, following the money. Mm-hmm. And that led to a system where openly partisan and sometimes even misinformed news content really started to win the day because it was really capturing the attention of Americans.
Which is a way of saying it's all about the clicks, right?
Yeah, you could say that. And critics will argue with this kind of a system, but on the other hand, and I've studied this extensively, there does not seem to be much of an appetite among American news consumers to move to a kind of model like you see in Europe, where you have heavily subsidized news agencies that are subsidized by the state. For a variety of reasons, that's just not really the way Americans like to do things.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time as always. We'll talk to Mike Strain, Agricultural Commissioner, when we come back. Time now, WWL First News.